Welcome, brave listeners, to Wilhelm Presents Frightening Tales. Please tune in to FrighteningTales.com for more scary stories. Today's tale is titled... Written by Mark Wilhelm. In the heart of summer, a house, just waiting for a family to fill its halls, sits nearly forgotten by the nearby city. That is until an unassuming couple brings with them the inherent sounds of the living. Aaron and Julie Newman were married in a small office for the Justice of the Peace. They both had the big weddings and had both watched as those relationships burned brightly and then out, leaving behind children and all the uncertainty of a new start. They had both, in their own way, picked up the pieces and made a go at life again. So when they found each other, it was as though so many checkboxes in their lives were just checked off. The attraction was immediate. And the way these two hearts just clicked was so natural that anyone who knew them would agree that it was meant to be. But while their chemistry was stable, their children were a volatile solution of oil and water, turbulent and bordering on vicious. It was the only sour point in their relationship. It was the cause of much tension and discourse. It was the main reason the family was searching for a new home, a place that had some space in it between the toxic children. They'd been searching for a long while, but there were always problems with the homes they'd find. One was in a bad neighborhood. One was too small. One was big enough but didn't have enough rooms. Some places had apartments built into them that had tenants, and they didn't want to deal with that. Some homes were so old that the upkeep and maintenance were a concern. It was beginning to feel like they wouldn't find a home. Life, though, has a way of giving you what you need, but only in those moments that you really need it. The phone call came at 9:30 p.m., rather late for a business call, but the realtor was excited to share the new listing. The following day, the couple went out to the house. It felt remote, but they'd barely been in the car a few minutes before they arrived. You'd never know it was there. Just a long road of trees and hills on the edge of town. The previous owner had updated the entire house before deciding to leave. Something about noise complaints. But the area was serene and quiet. Very peacefully quiet. There was a push lawnmower the previous owner left behind, as well as other amenities. Inside the house, everything was very modern. The realtor thought the previous owner must have been some kind of sound engineer or something, because nearly the entire home had some kind of soundproofing done. You noticed the change with your ears as soon as you entered. Even the sound of your clothes moving or your voice seemed thick and dull. The house was multi-level and had a separate two-car garage. A large yard surrounded by cedars gave the space a Tuscan feel, while great old trees in the front created spaces of shade. It seemed like a great place to settle down and raise a family. "What's the catch?" Aaron asked the realtor. But the realtor openly shared the listing notes with the couple. The street was originally slated for a new division of homes. All the services were installed with rough-ins to the other properties, but after the first house was built, came the dot-com crash of the early 2000s. And the company that was building here had invested in a lot of stocks that had tanked, and it had to pull out. Other builders owned the land on the other side of town, and expansion just naturally happened out that way. In time, some business owner would find the rights to finish what was started here, but for now, this is the only home on the street, only minutes away from the city, and it's incredibly peaceful out here. That evening, the deal was signed, and Aaron and Julie told their kids about the new home they bought. The next few weeks would entail the hectic schedule of selling their house, packing, and all the headaches that came with that. But a short while later, they were in their new home, surrounded by boxes, with a sense of adventure at a new start together. Even their kids were happy at the prospect of this new start. They were sitting around the table, devouring pizza, when there was a knock at the door. Shocked, they all looked at each other, and then Aaron got up and walked to the front door. A squad car was outside, and an officer was standing on the porch. Aaron opened the door. "Good evening, officer. Can I help you?"
"Good evening. I'm responding to a noise complaint. Are you the owner of this home?"
"Yes. We're just moving in today."
"A noise complaint?"
Aaron said, stepping out onto the porch. He looked out across his large lawn and then, stepping to the edge of the porch, looked up and down the road.
"Who is around to complain about the noise?"
I see your point, sir. Nevertheless, calls have been coming in, and if we get more than two, well, we send out a car. Is it just you here, sir?"
"No, my family and I just moved in."
You're welcome to come look around. It's just all boxes, though."
With that, Aaron and the officer entered the house. The officer looked around, saw the boxes stacked everywhere. When Julie came into the room,
"Aaron, what's the matter?" she asked, puzzled.
"Someone made a noise complaint," he said, shrugging.
"Good evening, ma'am. Apologize for disturbing your evening. It's just a routine response. It is our policy, after receiving more than one call, we send a car."
"More than one call? Officer, we're the only ones here."
"Well, yes, ma'am, I see that. It must be a prank. Please, make sure your children know that making a false call is a serious offense. It takes officers away from responding to real emergencies. You all have yourself a good evening."
The officer took another look around a sea of boxes and left the house. Aaron and Julie just looked at each other with puzzled expressions and then returned to dinner in the kitchen.
"Did one of you two think it would be funny to put in a noise complaint to the police?" Aaron asked his kids. The two looked at each other, and that look made it quite clear this was news to them, and they immediately assumed that the other was looking to get the other in trouble for it. They were always suspicious that way. Dinner finished, and the family set to unpacking a few boxes. The kids started to set up their rooms.
The next morning, the kids got up, got dressed for school, and convened in the kitchen for breakfast. Aaron's son poured himself a bowl of cereal. Then, reaching for a glass canister full of sugar, he unscrewed the lid, and when reaching for the spoon, knocked the lid onto the floor, spilling sugar on the counter in the process. Cursing in frustration at his mistake, he walked around the island he was working at, retrieved the lid, and went to scoop out a spoonful of sugar, and applied it to his cereal. Then he moved to the table with his bowl and watched videos on his phone. Not long after, Julie's son came into the room and glared at the other boy sitting at the table. He also grabbed a bowl from the cupboard and, standing at the island, poured himself breakfast. It was then that he saw the sugar spilled on the counter, where a message drawn with a single finger was written. He turned to the boy at the table.
"You think I'm the noisy one who had their music cranked in the shower this morning?"
He then set about sitting at the table as noisily as possible, dropping his bowl and making a point to clank his spoon whenever he could. Aaron's son, looking very confused, just rationalized that the other boy was in a mood today. He often didn't need a reason to snap at him, so it was just another one of those days. Not to be outdone, he started to play the same game, dropping his bowl noisily into the dishwasher and kicking the door shut with his foot, all the while staring at Julie's son, who was fuming at the table. To really finish it off, Aaron's son slammed the door to the kitchen on his way out. At that very moment, with the crack of the door, all the light fixtures in the kitchen exploded with sparks and the fractured glass skin of light bulbs twinkling as they fell to the floor. The room was dark and quiet now as Julie's son sat stunned at what had just happened. In that quiet, the boy could hear a small sound coming from the island. It was the sound of something sliding against something else. He got up from the table and slept closer to the island, whereupon his eyes caught the addition of exclamation marks to the writing in the sugar. Startled at first, his mind rationalized that it must have been there all along, and that the sparks were a fault in the house, something the previous owner didn't declare before moving out. Still, he was spooked, and he hurried off to school. Later that day, Aaron was upstairs in his office working remotely on a project that had all of his attention. In the corner of the room, he had a stylish Bluetooth speaker set up on a tower of boxes that had a relaxing playlist of ambient chill pouring out of it. He tapped away at his keyboard, merrily working on a presentation for his office executive team. After sufficiently completing enough of it, he found himself wanting the sweet cool of a cold drink. With a bounce in his step and whistling the tune that was on the speaker, he made his way to the kitchen, flipped on the light switch, and promptly wondered why they didn't go on. So he moved across to the window and opened the blinds. That was when he saw the mess in the kitchen. So he set about cleaning things up while mumbling under his breath about how difficult the boys were making it, and questioning why there was so much broken glass everywhere. Eventually, his efforts were rewarded with his drink, and he returned once more to his upbeat self, bouncing up the stairs to his office once more. The door to his office swung open to a quiet room, where his eyes found the Bluetooth speaker unplugged and on the floor. Aaron thought, well, the boxes must be unstable, and vibrations from the music agitated the cardboard, causing the speaker to tip and become unplugged. So he just replugged in the speaker and sat back upon the boxes, rustling the cardboard to check that it was firm and sound for the weight. Then he sat back at his desk, only to find letters from his keyboard had been removed and placed on his desk B-Q-U-I-E-N-T. Be quiet? He said to himself. His speaker suddenly grew louder with the crackle of white noise. And then it cleared. Aaron was noticeably uncomfortable now and stood up to look around his office. Hello? He said, wondering if someone was in the room. Perhaps one of the kids was here and was taking a prank too far. The plain rectangular room had an inset at one end of it, opposite the door, where a large window looked down into the yard. A warm, gentle breeze was blowing through it. His desk was in front of the window, but faced into the room. When he was working, he'd be able to address whoever came through the door. On one side of the room were a number of boxes and some empty bookcases. On the other, double closet doors made of wooden slats. Both doors were folded open with more boxes inside. The room was quiet. Aaron glanced out the window just then to notice a man standing in the shade of the great maple in the yard. The man caught his gaze, dressed in a suit of some kind, and had on a gentleman's hat. The figure looked up at the window and raised his hand to its mouth, with one finger pointed upwards, tapped his lips, and then turned to walk down the road. The single gesture shattered Aaron's cold fear, stoking inside an angry heat. Aaron bolted out of the room, down the stairs, and threw open his front door. You there, he shouted, descending his porch and crossing the yard in a fever. Were you in my house? Hey, you, I'm talking to you, he shouted, hurrying towards the figure. The man had turned at the cedar and went out of sight.
Don't walk away from me. I'm talking to you.
Aaron scolded and started to jog. Aaron wiped perspiration from his forehead, turning the corner of cedars to look down a winding road of trees and hills.
What? He couldn't be that fast, could he?
He thought to himself, panting in the sunshine. He continued following the sidewalk, past the various empty plots that were slated long ago for new homes. The land now filled with wildflower and tall grasses. More and more time elapsed, and those flames of anger began to dwindle and then just went out. Confusion filled the man's head now. Doubt flourished as he tried to reconcile what he'd experienced. He'd come a fair distance now from his home, and there was no sight of the man. He followed the sidewalk around a hill as the road was descending, opening a view of the green spaces and eventually the city in the distance. Down a bit more, on the left side of the street, it was the start of a tall retaining wall that grew and grew as you descended more, till it met a double gate, across from which was an empty lot that looked slated for a corner store or similar variety service. It was roughly paved around a real estate billboard containing contact information and sales slogans about your future business opportunity, weathered now by time. One single outdated, open-faced public payphone was installed on a pole with a streetlight that would shine down on the lot. Aaron walked closer to stand at the payphone. He hadn't seen one of these in years. Mobile phones had spelled the end of public services like this.
The silver keys looked in good condition. He noticed on top of the phone was a collection of quarters. He lifted the receiver and heard the ancient notification that the appropriate change was required to make an outgoing call, and kindly asked for the user to insert that amount to continue. Aaron hung up the receiver as his eyes caught the gate on the other side of the street. He approached the nondescript iron bars that closed off the route to traffic. Through the gate, a curvy road wound through the woods beyond. A metal placard on the wall nearby had embossed in it, "Everhurst Acres, circa 1954. Eternity waits for you." All of this just brought more questions. Aaron stepped back in front of the gates and rested his hands on the cool bars. "What is this?" he said aloud to himself. At that moment, the familiar ring of his phone shattered the silence. He pulled his device from his pocket to see the number 607-555-5613. But he didn't recognize it. He tapped the button to mute the ringer and let it go to his saved messages. "Probably a spam call," he said to himself. And then he flinched at the distinct sound of a phone receiver being set back forcefully. He whipped around his look at the payphone in the empty lot, its receiver cable now swinging. His phone pinged to notify him that a message was waiting. He tapped the button that brought up his saved messages and entered his password. All the while, his eyes never left the swinging receiver cable. The phone announced that he had one new message. He played it back. Is what he heard. But there was something more. Something he picked up in the background. He typed one to play it back again. And there it was. His unmistakable voice. "Probably a spam call," was quietly heard in the background. His eyes went wide, and he felt himself grow cold at the realization something from that phone just called him. He slowly approached the phone. Close enough now, he saw the service number engraved on a plate. 607-555-5613. Ancient fight or flight instincts took over for Aaron, and it was moments before he was aware that he had been running home. Out of breath, a strong iron taste in his mouth, he was scared and exhausted. He forced each step the rest of the way up the hill, around the curves, past the cedars, across his lawn, through the door he'd left open, and into his kitchen, where he got himself a cold glass of water. "What am I gonna do?" he said to himself in the quiet of the kitchen, trying to work out the problem with himself. I can't tell Julie. We invested everything we had into this home. How's she going to react to hearing ghosts are mad at us for living here? It's bad enough the kids are always at each other. Now we have the dead upset at us? Listen to me, the dead. There's no such things as ghosts. They're nice to have for people afraid to face the fact that life is short. Oh, maybe it's stress. Maybe none of this is real, and there's something wrong with me. Yeah, that's more likely than ghosts. Aaron picked up his phone and dialed his family doctor. "Hello, Dr. Adams' office." "Good morning. This is Aaron Newman. I'd like an appointment to see the doctor. I'm not feeling myself lately, and I'd like his opinion on a few things I'm experiencing. What's the earliest time available?" "Well, we have a cancellation this afternoon.
Are you free around 2:45 p.m.? Yes, that'll be just fine, thank you. I'll see you then. Aaron set to work clearing his afternoon and keeping himself busy with things in the house. He didn't play any music. He wore his slippers and kept himself as quiet as he could. Until he talked to the doctor, he didn't want to disturb those that might be listening. His appointment didn't offer many answers. He is a healthy man for his age with no concerns. So all that Aaron left with was a referral to a psychiatrist. When he got home, his sons were in the kitchen arguing about something, and their voices seemed to be escalating. All Aaron could think of is, are they upsetting the dead? He marched into the kitchen and told both boys to go to their rooms and that arguments are no longer being tolerated. They were confused and shocked at Aaron's stronger stance with them. He'd more or less let the two of them sort it out. They pushed back a little, which resulted in Aaron turning off the Wi-Fi for the next hour. The two boys retreated to their rooms for fear Aaron would start to remove their other electronics next. When Julie got home, she found Aaron on the porch steps. Just a mess. It was evident looking at him that he was bothered by something to such a degree he was stressed and tense. She sat next to him and put her arms around him. I went to see Dr. Adam today. I think I might be coming down with something, Aaron said quietly. You don't seem yourself, hon. Did something happen today? What did the doc say? Aaron wanted to tell her everything he saw. But this is crazy, he thought. I'll just wait till something else happens and then worry about it. I'll be all right. Just a difficult client I had to deal with this afternoon. You sure? Seems bigger than that, Julie pressed. You can talk to me, you know, right? Yeah, I know. It's nothing, I just came out here for some fresh air. Well, what did the doctor say? Julie asked. Well, apparently you're married to a very healthy man, he replied, a little defeated. Are you going to be out here long? No, I'll come in and get supper started. And with that, the two went into the house and started what, for anyone else, would be a normal evening. After a few hours passed, Aaron had completely let go of what he'd experienced that afternoon. Julie had that effect on him. The house was filled with soft jazz while the two distracted each other in the kitchen. Each of their sons was now engaged in interstellar warfare of some kind through their respective consoles. The occasional expletive shouted in frustration at either a loss or a win. Then, through the life of the house, came a slow knock at the front door. Knock. 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 Aaron looked at Julie, who quizzically looked back at him. Expecting anyone? She said, walking to the door. Aaron hurried after her, the memories of the day rushing back to him. He tried to outmaneuver her to get to the door first. Hun, let me get it. You don't have to worry about this, he said. But she was already there. Aaron flinched as she swung open the door. Hello, she said, standing there looking out onto a dark porch and the shadowy yard beyond. No one was there. Aaron took the door and he closed it. Must be the boys we heard. I'm sure we just mistook their games as the front door. You're starting to make me concerned, Julie protested. What is going on with you tonight, Aaron? You're not yourself. Suddenly, there were another three knocks at the door that startled them both. Knock, knock, knock. Julie whipped open the door, ready to catch whoever was doing this. Again, there was no one on the front porch. Then, still holding the door, she looked back at Aaron, who was trying to hold back a gasp. He slowly raised his arm and pointed out the door. Across the dark porch and across the dark lawn, under those great tree branches, out onto the street, stood a line of figures dark and disheveled, in various states of being and posture, standing shoulder to shoulder, as far left to as far right down the road. The streetlights above them accentuating the horrifying visual. Then from out behind one of the great trees stepped a shadowy figure. He walked forward across the lawn and stood in the light of the doorway. Wearing a dark suit and fedora, he stood a moment and then seemed to muster his strength to speak.
My associates and I would very much like if you could all just be quiet.
Then the figures in the street, from left to right, raised their hands to their lips. One finger pointed up and let out a long that sounded like air escaping a compressor. And as they gestured, the shush moved down along the line, in which they faded away, erased from the street. The figure on the lawn wheezed and spoke again.
You'll not like it if we must return again.
And then he seemed drawn back into the shadows of the yard, as if he were torn from that space on the porch. Julie stood frozen, staring at the empty doorway next to Aaron, who barely had enough willpower to pull the door from her hand and slowly, quietly close it. Suddenly, there was a crash from upstairs, making the parents jump. The two boys came down the stairs, screaming at each other about how the other was responsible for internet issues that somehow sabotaged the other's game. The two parents both reached out for their child and in unison hissed, "Shh!" But it was too late. The boys froze on the landing as the overwhelming shush got progressively louder and was no longer coming from just Julie and Aaron, but from all around the house. The boys looked confused at their parents and then quickly concerned. Tapping from the window started, and then knocking from all the doors in the house. The parents moved to their children, holding them tightly for fear of losing them. The reached a storm-like wail, and the house suddenly battered with buffets from hundreds of ghostly fists, rocked, till finally, the front door, giving under the weight of the force, blasted open with a great crack. The red and blue lights danced in the trees and bushes of the lawn. Dispatch, this is 4Delta-1. Show us answering a code 21 at 4235 Pinehurst Road East. As the two officers exited their cruiser, the young officer turned to his superior.
Seems a little quiet to you for a noise complaint.
The officer drew his sidearm and triggered his radio. Dispatch, 4Delta-1. Evidence of break and enter. We're entering the home. Send backup. The younger officer also drew his gun and they approached the front door of the home, each taking a position on either side of the door.
"Whoever's in this house, this is the police."
But it was quiet. Following procedure to the letter, the two officers entered the house, performed a search, but found none of the residents. The only sign of foul play was the broken door. Standing on the front porch again, the senior officer used his radio.
Dispatch, cancel backup, send forensics. There's no one here, but there is signs of forced entry.
And then he heard it from somewhere out in the yard.
Thank you, brave listeners, for being daring enough to make it this far through another frightening tale. You've been listening to Shh, written by Mark Wilhelm. I've nearly filled all 26 spots for Season 3, but if you have a scary story of your own, do submit it at frightingtales.com. Oh, and tune in again next Friday for another frightening tale. That is, if you're brave enough.